Hi, I'm Perry, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains. Hello and welcome to The Beauty Brains, a show where real cosmetic chemists answer your beauty product questions and give you an insider's look at the cosmetic industry. This is episode 364. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, and with me today is Valerie George. Hello, Valerie.
Hi, Perry. It's good to see you.
You too. We briefly saw you last week, but it wasn't long enough. But you know what isn't long enough either? Our showtime, because we've got a lot of questions on today's show. We're going to cover questions, including, is sun powder a sensation? Does a corneometer measurement prove a moisturizer works better? What does melatonin do in a body scrub? What does it mean when a shampoo claims it promotes hair growth? And can eyelash serum really cause dry eyes? But first, some chit-chat. Yeah, you know, it reminded me, Valerie, I only saw you last week in the airport because I missed you at the show.
I know, it was so busy. It's such a great time to see people, get caught up in conversation. I know we tried to hang out a couple times after the show, but I had a class to teach online, and we just didn't get to connect.
That's right. You were quite busy. Which is okay. I got to see you right there at the end. And, you know, those shows, you go to these trade shows and you're walking around and you know a bunch of people. And then 20 minutes later, you just got to move to the next booth. There's no way you can get to everybody.
No, especially people really know who we are.
Right, right. I tell you, I'm not very good at ending conversations.
I know.
So sometimes I will just avoid starting it. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe I have some social anxiety or something, but it's the ending that always gets me.
What if we're the ones who keep people engaged and they're thinking, geez, I can never get away from Perry and Valerie?
It could be. You know, when I'm going around those shows, I always feel bad when I take some of the candy that's out on the bowl and I don't stick around to talk about something I'm not interested in anyway. Is that bad?
Well, what's worse is pretending to be interested in what they have to get the candy. I did that once and I felt terrible, but I was like, you know what? I need these Haribo gummy bears.
I know. And then one place had margaritas. It was fabulous.
Whoa, that sounds
fun.
Yeah,
it was a great show. I had a great time teaching a class and I nailed my tricks. That's always important for me. Doing a little juggling, balancing a hat on a nose, and ukulele playing. And of course, oh yeah, teaching about cosmetic chemistry, there's that too.
Man, I wish I had tricks like that. My only trick is being able to talk for 180 minutes nonstop about a topic.
Well, that's good. Well, speaking of Suppliers Day, that's the raw material show that we're just talking about. Check in with last week's episode to learn more about that. But what'd you see there? See anything interesting?
Well, not super interesting because I had been previewed quite a bit of stuff before the show. A lot of the launches previously launched at a show called In Cosmetics in Paris.
Right.
But I did see some themes, and one of them was a lot of fermented materials and a lot of biotech-produced materials, which is a really cool topic for me. My graduate work was in biotechnology, and I think it's extra interesting now because the term, oh, it's biotech produced or it's produced through fermentation, it's thrown around like it's always a more sustainable or better option. And I don't think it's the case. So
right.
I think we'll continue to see some pushback against these companies, or we'll start to see pushback against these companies to throw some metrics out there.
Well, I guess the idea is that it's replacing petrochemicals, and petrochemical is like a bad thing. But these, I originally thought that these fermentation tanks or these biotechs were going to reduce the amount of land that's required for plant-based ingredients. But in fact, you have to feed those bacteria and mold something. And so they have to grow fields of sugarcane or whatever to feed back into there. So it's actually, it takes up more land than if you would have just planted a food crop.
And it's not just taking up land to grow sugar-rich items to feed the bacteria or the yeast. There's also agricultural runoff, water that's used possibly in irrigating these crops to provide the plants to feed the microorganisms. So I would like to see numbers.
Yeah, I would too. It's good that they're trying, and maybe it replaces petroleum products, but we only have so much land. I don't know if it's such a great idea to use up farmland that could feed people to making cosmetic ingredients.
What else did you see?
What I did notice is that there wasn't as much push of natural as it has been in previous years. You know, they still have that skinification of hair care.
It's a term I hate so much. Sorry, guys, you're not putting skincare ingredients on your hair. This skinification of hair is actually a skinification of scalp trend. And it's like, guys, your scalp is skin. And I actually have a talk about this topic, and I get really steamed up when I hear the word skinification of scalp, or the phrase, when I hear the phrase skinification of scalp or skinification of hair. And if you want to hear me give this talk, you can attend the Southwest Society of Cosmetic Chemists Suppliers Day in September. I'll be giving it there.
Oh, well, that'll be fun. Looking forward to that. So there was that. I see there was a lot of old ingredients out there. You know, I guess they're having a moment again, like to talk about things that have been around for a long time.
Well, it's so expensive to bring new ingredients to market because of all the regulatory and safety data that's required for its sale. It's at least a few million dollars, at least. So I can understand why people are trying to talk about old stuff they already have.
All it showed to me, though, was that there isn't a lot of innovation going on in our industry, at least in terms of making ingredients that are going to have an impact on the consumer, what they notice as far as performance goes.
I also noticed this simplified beauty trend, and I actually predicted it in a Happy Magazine article a handful of months ago. I'm a little annoyed by the trend because I've always been about simplified ingredient lists, less in the formula. You kind of just put what you have to in there. If it's not in there for another purpose, you don't put it in.
Sure.
And people are just capitalizing on it like, oh, this is the right thing to do. Oh, where were you last year when you had 48 ingredients in a shampoo? It's just like, it's not a trend, guys. Like, this is, it's a way of formulation.
It is, but it's also a way that marketers will run out of stuff to talk about. Because one of the reasons that you found a lot of ingredients in a product was you could give your marketer, one year they'll talk about this ingredient that's in there, and then a year later, they can sort of relaunch the product. You don't have to do any reformulating. You just talk about some other ingredient that's been in there the whole time. So now without that, it's going to be less efficient, I guess, because you have to like reformulate every year if you want to launch something.
I bet in a year or two, the trend of putting more ingredients in a product will come back. For a little while there, cell phones got really tiny, and then they got really big again, and now they're starting to get small again. So I think it's going to be a little bit like that.
It's that cyclical nature. Like, we are in almost a fashion business, right? And you go through these fashion cycles. And I remember in the mid-90s, there was this whole clear trend, and everybody was trying to be clear and natural. And then it sort of went away. And, you know, I see that coming back, too.
Oh, goodness. Do you think Pepsi will relaunch their crystal clear Pepsi? Do you remember that?
I do remember.
Do you remember that?
I remember that. You know, remember is one of those words that I purposely say wrong just because it's fun to do. Bemember.
I unpurposefully say it wrong.
Oh, there you go. Well, speaking of wrong, how about we head on to the beauty news?
Over the course of the show, we've talked about a lot of lawsuits happening, mostly with Johnson & Johnson, and more recently with the benzene in sunscreens or in other aerosol products. And two lawsuits, hopefully, are coming to an end.
Yeah, we'll see. I saw this one. This one certainly is coming to an end. Unilever has settled their benzene lawsuit. It turns out that they are going to pay $2 million to resolve the Suave aerosol benzene problem. Remember back in, I think that was last year?
Yep.
That company Valisure found high levels of benzene in sunscreens or other aerosol products. And it turns out that the Suave 24-hour protection powder aerosol anti perspirant contain higher than allowed levels of benzene. Valisher found 5.21 parts per million, which is 2.6 times that of the FDA concentration limit. Unilever said it was from their propellant, which probably was. So
it definitely was. I remember the propellant company sending out notifications like, hey, oh, shoot. And it was like, yep, that's a big mistake.
Well, then Unilever had a recall of that product. And this settlement is to pay off people who are, I guess they're looking for refunds for buying that product. So that's the recall. So $2 million they have set aside to resolve that issue.
Well, the plaintiffs initially complained that the product was defective because it contained benzene and Unilever didn't disclose this on the product labeling. Benzene is not an intentionally added ingredient. It's actually an impurity, and therefore it's exempt from label disclosure per the Fair Packaging and Labeling Act.
Yeah, you don't have to put residual chemicals on the label. You only have to put what you put in the ingredients on purpose.
Exactly. There was another lawsuit settlement I mentioned, Johnson & Johnson, J&J, and we used to have a little segment on the show called J&J Talc Corner because of all these talc lawsuits, and it looks like one is hopefully coming into an end. J&J proposes a new settlement.
Yeah, they're going with $6.475 billion to settle all of the ovarian cancer talc claims. Now, some people would look at that and say, oh, Johnson & Johnson is finally admitting that this is a problem. Well, that is not the case here.
It's a bit of an Alford plea type deal, right? We'll settle it, but we're not admitting any fault.
Well, I think it's their lawyers must have, or their finance people must have done the calculation. They're like, yeah, if we can get rid of all of these lawsuits for $6 billion, it's worth it to us.
Because you're worth it.
Right.
Oh, that's the Maybelline. Or is that CoverGirl?
I do not know, but it's one of those. Well, I was found most interesting at the end. They said J&J still stands by the science and reiterated that none of the talc-related claims against the company have any merit. The claims and premise on the allegations that have been rejected by independent experts as well as government and regulatory bodies for decades, the company says. So they still vehemently deny, and the science kind of backs them up on it, that their talc product doesn't cause ovarian cancer, despite putting up $6.4 billion to get it to go away. Now, I read in the article, it said that consumers have to vote on this, and if 75% of consumers agree to drop their lawsuit, then this plan goes forward.
I thought it would be like consumers on TikTok, because I thought this is not going to be good.
Yeah, it's a 75% of the claimants. So out of their, you had to have already signed up for the class action lawsuit.
Well, this is exactly a little bit of an Alford plea. So an Alford plea, according to all the true crime documentaries I watch, is where essentially you plead guilty, but you also maintain your innocence. And the reason you plead guilty is you either don't want to go through with the trial, you want to take this type of plea deal where you're arranging for a lesser sentence. Maybe you don't think you'll win the case. So you say, okay, I'm pleading no contest, but I also didn't do it. And so Right. It's a way to kind of get it over with. And that's a little bit of what J&J is doing here.
We'll see if that goes through. And if anything changes to that, we'll report on it. Valerie, I saw this other one, which I kind of think was a little bit ridiculous, but The article says, should you wear makeup while you exercise? Do you use a lot of makeup while you're exercising?
I don't actually wear makeup at all most of the time. Oh. Sometimes I'll put mascara on. You can always tell the next day when I try to repurpose the mascara as eyeliner because it crumbled all over my face. Creates a little bit of a smoky eye, but I generally don't wear it at all. I usually just wear sunscreen.
Well, as reported in Science Tech Daily, there is a study published in the Journal of Cosmetic Dermatology that explores how wearing cosmetic foundation during aerobic exercise will impact the skin and the pores. They had 43 college students.
Okay.
20 males and 23 females.
All right.
And they applied a foundation cream to half of their face. Now, they didn't do like half face. They did a T area and then they did a U area.
So, okay. Interesting.
And essentially, they found wearing makeup while you exercise may block your pores and increase sebum production.
Help, I can't breathe.
So,
Is that what the pores are saying?
I think so. So they said that's a bad thing, apparently, and you shouldn't do it.
Well, you actually found this study that this sensational news article is referencing, and you read it. What is your take on it?
My take is this seems like a lot of fear-mongering and BS, if you ask me. I mean, first of all, so they use this Aaron-Humus device or something?
Aaron-Humus device. Yes, Humus, it's a skin and hair analyzer. I used to have one in my old corporate life.
Well, it says it's able to take pictures of the skin so you can measure pore size and it can measure oil production and
skin moisture content.
Like, this isn't used in, like, I don't know, journal reproductions. We don't use this when we're measuring skin. So why would they do that?
Well, this is a device available basically on a consumer level. It's a handful of $1,000, anywhere from $3 to $7. I can't remember the price, but it's easily accessible to anybody. And it comes in a little kit and they tell you how to make the measurements and how to take the pictures. The camera is integrated into the device. So it would be interesting to understand what model they used, because cameras, the technologies do change over time. It's why when I created a device through my previous employer, we actually used the camera on your smartphone because it's one of the best cameras around. But this is a clinical instrument that they would use in a third-party laboratory. This is something that they probably had access to.
Right, and that's probably why they used it. So all I know is studies like this, first, there's a small amount of people. The exercise that they had was kind of dubious. You know, they walked for a couple of minutes, and it was like 20 minutes. It's hardly exercise. So that seems sketchy. They seem sketchy that they were doing this study with 20-somethings. You know, I get that's the population that they have, but your skin at 20 is going to be different than your skin at 30 or 40 or 50, you know?
Your pores are a little smaller, that's for sure.
I don't know. Overall, I don't think it's warranted to say that you shouldn't wear makeup while you're exercising. Now, you know, it seems like extra work and, you know, you're going to have to wash your face anyway, so you have to put it back on. But if people want to look a certain way while they're exercising, I don't see that. This study would not say to me that you shouldn't.
I think there's also things you can do to mitigate the effects of wearing makeup while you're exercising as well. There's a lot of actives that could be used. You could use salicylic acid to help reduce the sebum production within your pores. There's things that can be done. And at the very end of this study, I had to giggle when I read this statement. They are publishing this study as basically a public service announcement to make people aware of the ramifications of wearing makeup while they exercise. And to me, this is kind of like a fun study to do. Yeah. I don't know that it's earth-shattering.
No. And even the results are talking like, oh, clogged pores by like, you know, a tiny percentage difference. Like, okay, does that matter anything in the real world? Come on.
There's so much variability, and that's just one foundation they tested.
Right. How many, you know, is it oil-based foundations, water-based foundations, powder, you know, what about
silicone-free with silicones?
Right. Yeah, for sure. So I wouldn't say, based on this study, that I would worry about wearing makeup while exercising, although I wouldn't because, you know, I don't really wear makeup.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Are we ready to move on to questions?
We actually have some listener feedback.
Wait, we do? Oh, yeah.
We do. Superfan Rumyana pointed out this about our conversation about prescription tretinoin. We had said in a previous episode that you should definitely not buy tretinoin from the internet and have it mailed to your house based on the lady dying from hemorrhoid cream.
Right. But also, to be fair, one of the websites we looked at had ads for cryptocurrency everywhere too, which is kind of a red flag for me.
Exactly. But Rimyana says, "Hi, Beauty Brains. I just have a comment about prescription tretinoin. I know it's prescription only in the US, but I'm not sure if it needs to be, as it is not a prescription in other countries. Not sure who's right or wrong, but if you live in the US or Canada, you can also get legit tretinoin when going on vacation to Mexico, Costa Rica, Colombia, etc. I have myself bought it this way, and I think it's a reasonable way to get it cheaply if you happen to be traveling or have friends that are traveling."
Yeah, when I was in Mexico in January, the friends I was there with, they were very much into getting like antibiotics and other prescription stuff through like pharmacies because you didn't need prescriptions for a lot of stuff. That does not give me a lot of confidence. I don't know.
Well, when I would go to Europe and when I used to get migraines and I didn't have health insurance, but I could get my migraine medicine or a similar one over the counter for very cheap, I would do that and stock up on that because it was made by the same drug maker. I knew a lot about the medicine itself, and I had confidence that the UK pharmacy, the German pharmacy, the Greek pharmacy that I was walking into, that it was an okay material. But also, I got counseled by the pharmacist at those pharmacies. They asked me, "Have you been prescribed this?" Not anyone off the street can just go in and get it. They actually had a conversation with me. I explained to them I took it in the US. I showed them a prescription. I said, "I'm familiar with the side effects." And then they sold it to me. It wasn't just on a shelf and I picked it up and I said, "Let me grab it." I understand it seems like tretinoin's a little innocuous because it's just something for skincare anti-aging, but it actually can really wreck your skin if you don't know what you're doing. And not everyone should be taking it. And so that's why I'm a little hesitant to say I get it. You can get it there. It's very cheap. It's reasonable. But I would still have a conversation with your doctor. And I would still look at who the drug manufacturer is listed on the box because it still has to be made under pharmaceutical conditions, no matter what geography you're buying it in. And if you can't validate that, I probably wouldn't get it.
I would have more faith in a brick and mortar store that you get in a foreign country than I would in some random website that's
with cryptocurrency.
Right.
Would you like to pay in Bitcoin or...
I like to pay in Ethereum or something.
Yeah, but anyway, that's great feedback. Thank you so much for that, Rumiana. Excellent points. And if you are someone who does those things, just do a little more diligence in looking at the box and looking at the store you're walking into.
Yeah, stay safe out there, people. All right, we ready for some questions?
Now we're ready. This one comes to us from a new patron, Beth. Speaking of patrons on Patreon, we are the only ad-free beauty podcast on the interwebs. If you want to keep our show ad-free, please head over to patreon.com/thebeautybrains and support at any level. We love our patrons. We prioritize their questions first and are trying to build in really great incentives for our patrons as the year goes on. This was actually my first Patreon plug, Perry, so I hope I did a good job.
Oh, you did a good job. Excellent. And thank you for joining, Beth. So what's Beth's question here?
Beth says, "Hey, Valerie and Perry, I'm a nurse and aesthetic practitioner from the UK. I love listening to both of you on my way to work. I love listening to you both on my way to and from my long shifts. It makes cycling home so enjoyable. I've always wanted to ask a question, but someone always beats me to anything I want answers to. However, I just came across this product, Soul Science's Regenerative Skincare Sun Powder. I'm a skeptic like Perry with a lot of products. Is this snake oil? I'm figuring it is. Let me know your thoughts. Please keep up the amazing work you both do. Greatly appreciative skeptic, Beth."
Well, that's great to hear. And she included like a little TikTok video of a Stanford-trained dermatologist or cosmetic surgeon or something plugging this product. Oh boy, I have some thoughts.
The first thought is it's on TikTok, so immediately your gut has to kick in and say, "What the heck is this?"
Well, you know what my first reaction is?
It's, what?
This is a supplement. Obviously, it's snake oil because supplements are unregulated claptrap. If you ask me,
that's not true, Perry. One time, I invited a gentleman to speak at a big SCC meeting from a very large dermatologist founded brand. And his opening line was, "Contrary to popular belief, supplements are regulated." And he proceeded to go through the handful of things that they have to follow. And there's guidelines they have to follow, but I wouldn't say it's quite regulated.
Well, I will say it used to be regulated, and then the Deshaies Act was passed in 1993 or two or something, which pretty much removed all the regulation that the FDA could do on it. Because, yeah, the FDA sets up rules and such, but if you don't make health claims and you make this warning at the bottom, it says, warning, none of these claims are validated by the FDA, there is no consequence to bad behavior unless the FDA can prove that you're killing people. Otherwise, you can do whatever you want.
Okay, I
I just
sense you're
think
getting fired up. What
no.
else? What else tipped you off on this brand?
It's put together by a Stanford-trained skin cancer person and a
Harvard-trained cosmetic dermatologists, and they have really cute characters of themselves on the website.
characters, and it's formulated by the leading skin cancer surgeon and dermatologist. So they put together these powders. Come on, who are they kidding? What, in their spare
They
time?
did it in between patients.
I guess so.
Is this why doctors are always late? They're working on formulating their products, while you're waiting in the waiting room.
Right, it could be. I lost a lot of faith in doctors when I was going through college because I was a biology major, and most people who were biology majors were all pre-med, and these people were not smart people. I mean, they were not.
Well, in chemistry, we would always say if you couldn't handle chemistry, you drop down to biology.
Right. I mean, they all avoided like calculus and stuff. They're like, oh, that's too hard. Like, oh God. I know, I'm bad. I mean, I'm sure, there's it takes a lot of work to get better. Okay. But I have to wonder, if you're such a good doctor, why are you selling supplements? But back to the product. Back to the product. All right. They say it's scientifically studied. Okay, that just means some scientist ran a study. Doesn't mean anything. And
Well, Perry, they said they ran a large phase 3 clinical trial.
yeah, I don't know what that means. Maybe that means something in respect to drug development, but
Well,
for
actually, it says the active they used was shown in a
oh
large phase 3 clinical trial. So it actually wasn't their phase 3
oh
clinical trial. So,
okay
oops.
okay all right, so it's not going to kill people, I guess. That's what phase three tells you. But what did they say here? They say for people who want skin protection from melasma and sunspots. This is for people who have a history of skin cancer, it's for people with prolonged sun exposure. Now, I'm reading this, and this is just a powder drink. This is just a supplement drink. You mix it in with water, you powder, you drink it. Well,
I bet you it's orange flavored because the color scheme is orange and they use vitamin C.
it says must be taken daily for cumulative benefit of skin cancer reduction properties. So
Ooh.
they're saying this is going to reduce skin cancer. I could see somebody seeing this and saying, oh, I can just drink this and then I'm not going to have to use a sunscreen anymore. I'm like, no, this isn't protecting from sunscreen, but these claims kind of make it seem like it does.
It allows people to have a sense of confidence and overlook some of the other preventative measures, perhaps.
They say they're hanging their hat on this nicotinamide, which is
Nicotinamide.
yeah, which is shown to be involved in the skin's DNA repair mechanism. But I have not seen evidence where you drink this stuff and it's going to fix sun damage. So no, I okay. So I guess. Oh, and then they have hyaluronic acid in there. Yay! It's just like, oh, we have the nicotinamide, so let's put in some biotin. Collagen. You need to put collagen in there and hyaluronic acid
Collagen
and.
peptides, yeah, that'll just get broken down in your stomach.
So the bottom line here is it snake oil? I mean, it's not oil, it's powder. But I think it'll be as
It's
protective.
snake powder.
It's right. No snakes were harmed in it, but it's not a product I would recommend, and I am quite frankly a little bit offended that dermatologists or trained Stanford and Harvard people are putting this out. I don't know. Maybe I'm too harsh, but
Maybe it can't hurt to take it, but I also don't know that that's the case because there is very little burden of proof in safety for a lot of things, supplements included. The other thing I don't like, and they say this because they legally have to, They talk about the phase three clinical trial active. They don't actually mention which one it is in their online homepage, but they say all the great information about it. It reduces the incidence of non-melanoma skin cancers by 30% and precancerous growths by 20% in high-risk patients. But also, these statements have not been evaluated by the FDA, and this product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Right. They say this can prevent cancer, but then they say this product is not intended to prevent cancer. So,
And that's the way out of it. If someone says, "Hey, this didn't work, I still got cancer," or something happened to me, and they say, "Well, we put our little disclaimer there." So,
exactly.
oops.
So, buyer beware.
And also, I did notice upon further investigation, it's actually not orange flavored, which is a huge disappointment. It's melon flavored.
Oh, melon flavored.
At least the Goop vitamin C powder is citrus flavored.
You know, that reminds me, every weekend, like if I have a busy weekend, I got to do yard work and stuff, or I got to run errands and stuff. You know, I call that a melon weekend
Why is that?
because I have a lot of honeydews.
Oh my gosh. Of course you would. That's awful. Well, maybe you could also get the supplement powder and make it a double melon weekend.
Could be. Speaking of double melon, let's move on to question two. This one comes to us from another patron, Misty. Hi, Beauty Brains. I saw this ad on Facebook for L'Oreal Revitalift Plumping Water Cream. In the video, the person uses a corneometer to supposedly measure their skin's hydration before and after using the product. He shows his hydration level at 19% before applying the cream and 60% after. While I'm sure it's a fine product, wouldn't any moisturizer show a higher number after application compared to skin that is not moisturized? And that's from Misty. Well, thanks for the question, Misty. Did you watch the video, Valerie?
Yes, this is classic marketing coming up with a great shtick for people to be like, holy cow, this thing actually works. It's another device, it's another way to test something. The ingredient list is water, propylene glycol, which is a humectant, glycerin, which is a
Right.
humectant, dimethicone, which is an occlusive that helps reduce transepidermal water loss,
Sure.
denatured alcohol, octyl dodecanol, which is an emollient, caprolimethicone, which is an emollient, betaine, which is a humectant, niacinamide, we all know what that is,
Sure.
isohexadecane, which provides slip, probably also helps reduce transepidermal water loss, blah, 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 hyaluronic acid, a little ceramide, another little ceramide, lecithin, which is probably part of the ceramide carrier system, and that's pretty much it. So we have a lot of things that are going to help bring moisture to the skin and keep the moisture on the skin.
Look, it's a product from L'Oreal. You know, they have PhDs who made this thing, and L'Oreal has a lot of good technology. So yeah, I'm sure it's a great product.
It's a great
But
moisturizer. Of course,
yeah.
it's going to take skin at 19% and make it a whole lot higher. That's how a moisturizer works, and literally any moisturizer is going to do this. I mean, I think it's cool they're demonstrating how a moisturizer works, but literally every moisturizer would have this effect.
Right. Exactly. If you put a blob of water on your head, it's going to have that effect. You know? I mean, maybe the number won't be as high or whatever.
Oh
And
man.
you can totally trick this out. I remember using a corneometer, and a corneometer is a little bit better than that device they used in the exercise study. What was that? The Ampho something, whatever. That one.
Aarhus. It is a great device, by the way. I just was
Oh, is it?
surprised it was used in a scientific study.
Okay, well, the corneometer is used in scientific studies, but I, having used a corneometer, I know how dubious your measurements with a corneometer are. You got to control humidity, you got to control
Were you going
temperature.
to say dubious or were you going to say something else? Because I thought I saw your mouth making a W shape.
No, dubious is my thesaurus went to dubious today.
Okay, all right.
So, the measurements to me are a bit dubious, but here's one thing that happens. So, you take the measurement. First, you got to wipe off the sweat. If you have any water on the surface, that's going to show up on this corneometer. So you wipe off the area. If you're doing a study, you would take a little alcohol swab and you'd wipe it off and then dry it, and then that would be your starting point. So then you put the thing on there, and he didn't do that. He just like plopped it on his head. So you put the thing on there, and you get a number. It's based on conductance at the surface and the probe and such. And then they convert the number that you get, they convert it to some simple percentage and blah, blah, blah. Okay. Then you put the cream on. Now, one of the things you got to do, if you don't wipe the cream in far enough, once you put that thing back on, the probe back, you're measuring the cream, the moisture in the cream. So it's not your skin that's getting measured. It's the actual product. So you've got to wait some time for this thing to work. You know, you can't just do it right away.
And the corneometer is really sensitive. Ingredients in a formula can sway the corneometer one way or another, and it actually has nothing to do with your skin. So pretty cool trick that they did to show cool how trick. It works. There's a lot of nuance to it. And is it necessarily meaningful? I don't know. That's why I'm in hair.
Right.
And we have our own problems with claims testing.
It was a clever enough demo, but you are absolutely correct. Pretty much any product is going to show a change like that, especially the way that he did it. And if the product has glycerin in it, it's going to show a big change. And surprise, surprise, glycerin is the third ingredient in this one.
Should we get a little corneometer off Amazon and do our own testing for the Beauty Brains fans?
That would be a lot of fun. We could use it as TikTok content.
Oh my goodness. For our first TikToks, I would like to test the content of my eyeball.
Yeah, that'd be fun. All right. Well, thanks for that question. Let's move on to the next one.
Hi, Valerie and Perry. Hope you and the kitties are doing well.
Oh, no. Still talking about Stash, but...
But Pretty Kitty is coming around and Cookie is warming up to me as well. So they're doing good. Thank you for asking.
Wow.
Someone recently recommended the Dr. Teal's Melatonin Body Scrub to me. And I was wondering if the melatonin in this product actually does anything. If so, should this product only be used in the evening? Will it put me to sleep if I use it in the morning? Link to the product below. Thanks for all you do, Cora.
And there is an Ulta product, the Shea Sugar Body Scrub. The first thing I noticed about this product is that it doesn't have any water in it.
Well, it's a sugar body scrub. It can't have water, otherwise the sugar crystals will prematurely dissolve before they have a chance to hit your skin.
Right. Sucrose is the first ingredient. So there you go. So is it going to put her to sleep?
I found this question really interesting. One, because it reminded me of our dear fan, Frank. Maybe he doesn't listen to the podcast anymore because we forgot to get back to him. We were in such a research deep dive about whether or not caffeine in an eye cream could keep you awake. And then by the time we finally answered his question, the product had been discontinued.
That's right. I mean, we did. Admittedly, we answered the question 3 years later, but we answered the question. We did.
We sure did. But this is a great question because melatonin is something that if you have it enter your bloodstream, it will impact you. One time I was traveling, this was back when I used to get migraines before I had the surgery, and I would have to keep a migraine pill in my pocket. Well, I had been traveling for work. Airplanes used to give me migraines. Thunderstorms gave me migraines. And so where I was traveling to for work at a factory, a thunderstorm was rolling in and I thought, oh gosh, I need to take a migraine pill. Immediately I got an Aura. It was coming. And I reached into my pocket and I pulled a pill out and I was like, perfect. And I said, well, it's the same shape as my migraine pill, but I don't see the usual numbers impressed into it. Well, the person that was with me said, it's probably your migraine pill. Take it anyway. And I thought, beautiful, I will. So I took it and I literally was falling asleep on the factory floor. And then we went to lunch and I kept nodding my head. And I was like, oh my God, that was the melatonin in my pocket from the flight the night before because I took a red eye.
Oh my.
So, and it was only 3 milligrams. So melatonin will impact you. And the thing is, even topically, it's going to impact you. There are plenty of studies on the internet that show topically applied melanin, because it's lipophilic, will travel through the layers of your outer skin and possibly enter the bloodstream.
Yeah, there have been some studies. I saw this one published in a clinical trial report. I mean, it's 22 women. It was a small amount, and they claim that it's going to help with anti-aging, crow's feet, and that sort of stuff. But you know what? This was from a cream that you put on the skin and you leave it there, delivered from a scrub that you put on and it immediately gets taken off. I don't see how it's going to deliver any measurable amount of melatonin into your body in this way. So I think the melatonin isn't really doing much in this formula.
In this particular product, because it's a rinse off, I would totally agree. But even a tiny percentage of melatonin, like 0.01%, can have some effect in your bloodstream in a cream. So I would say if you are concerned about any impact whatsoever, or if you'd like to eat your sugar body scrubs in the shower, which I totally do not recommend, I would probably avoid using this in the morning just in case and only use it at night. It's something after my melatonin experience, I would rather be safer than sorry on.
They say it's formulated with melatonin, chamomile, and lavender essential oils. It's exfoliating your skin so you can experience a soothing and refreshing blend of oils right before going to sleep. So the melatonin, I think, is put in there not because it's doing anything, but it sort of boosts this nighttime, make you feel better, serene story. That would be my guess about
it's certainly evocative.
Yeah, but it's not going to, I don't think it's going to deliver enough to actually do anything.
Not at all. Our next question comes to us from Renata. She says, hi, Beauty Brains. Hope you're doing well. I have a question about the Dercos Energizing Shampoo. After listening to a great deal of episodes of the Beauty Brains, I've learned that the only thing that can make hair grow is minoxidil. But what is the deal with shampoos like Dercos that claim to promote hair growth? Is there any difference it can make, like promoting some sort of healthier scalp so hair can grow? Is their technology outstanding in any way, or should I just buy regular shampoo? Well, this is an awesome question because shampoos for thinning hair are all over the place in the market. And it's hard to know if they're actually going to do anything for you because they're not minoxidil. They're probably using ingredients, at least in the United States and Canada, that are not permitted for hair growth. So right. What is it exactly in this shampoo, Perry, that they say is doing the work?
Well, Valerie, looking at it, they say it's made up of a 1.5% concentration of a patented anti-hair loss molecule called aminoxidil.
Wow.
And together with vitamins PP, B5, and B6. What's vitamin PP? Is this a new one?
Is that urea? I just did a Perry
you
joke,
are so,
and I made
oh my
you
God.
Laugh.
I can't
I'm
believe I didn't think
of
that.
I'm turning into Perry.
Well, so, okay, so they have, it's a sulfate-based shampoo. They have, it's a standard shampoo. It looks good. The ingredient they have in here, I guess they're hanging their hat. It has niacinamide, panthenol, so there's your vitamins. It's polyquaternium 10, so there you go. Pyridoxine HCI.
That's a nutrient that's essential for hair growth.
Yeah. And their patented aminoxidil pro targeted solution. So
aminoxidil is a trade name for a drug compound that is diaminopyrimidine oxide. And it's very chemically similar to minoxidil. And although both compounds have been used for therapy for alopecia, aminoxidil is not approved for use as a drug in the United States or Europe. And there is no proof of therapeutic effect for aminoxidil against alopecia. So it sounds like it was something that was studied. It's chemically similar to minoxidil. It's not approved for use as a drug. There's not really any proof that this particular item has therapeutic effect. And this brand is leveraging it based on the fact that it has some similarity to minoxidil. That would be my suspicion.
Yeah, and if you look at the claims they're making, clinically proven to restore vigor and vitality to the hair. That's a fluff
nice.
Claim, right? Like,
I love it when brands use the word vigor.
Sure. Wasn't that there some Bible thing, vigor and something?
I thought maybe you're talking about Ghostbusters, or is that Vigor? Who's the evil guy in Ghostbusters?
I thought it was the green guy, right?
No, that's Slimer. Oh my gosh, you need to rewatch the film.
I have to. All right. Well, anyway.
I need to rewatch it too, because I don't think his name is Vigor.
Probably not. Well, I don't think this is Vigor is going to help your hair either. So, how do they get away with implying, Valerie, that they're going to boost your hair? I guess they're hanging their hat on this similar molecule to minoxidil, which has no proof. So there's that.
There are a lot of essential nutrients that are great for the hair growth cycle. So that they do have that. And keeping a really clean scalp is great for your hair follicle. The people who do the no poo method, I've taken my microscopic pictures of their scalp, and it is just really atrocious, lots of buildup. You can get stuff off your hair with just water or even just baking soda, but you really need a lathering shampoo to get a lot of debris and oily type things off of your scalp. And so in that sense, I feel like any shampoo or even this shampoo can promote a clean scalp environment, which is, you know, a portion of the battle. But is it actually getting into your follicle and allowing the hair growth cycle to be impacted? I think that's hard to do in a shampoo.
It's also important to note that they don't make that claim here. So somehow you've got the impression from their marketing stuff that they're going to say they promote hair growth. They are implying that, but they never say this product makes your hair grow. And so that's how they can do it.
And they did it because they got a lot of people. That's for sure.
I do. So the final part of that question is, should I just buy a regular shampoo? My answer is yes.
Just
buy a regular shampoo. Looks like we have time for one more question. Hello, Beauty Brains. I'm a big fan of the podcast, and I finally have a question for you. 2 years ago, during my annual eye exam, my doctor commented on my dry eyes and said she had been seeing lots of new cases since the pandemic because people were spending so much time online. Just watching the screen too much? My screen usage had not changed, but I started using some eye drops and am getting some relief. I'm wondering if my dry eyes could be connected with my use of an eyelash serum, specifically the Grande Lash, during this time. I have seen great results with the serum, but I will not continue to use it if I could be contributing to my eye dryness. Thanks for your help, Jane. Valerie, dry eyes.
Oh, goodness. Dry eyes can be problematic, although I've never had them, but it sounds like it could be very painful when you're blinking. This is a very interesting product question because I think, Jane, that this product could actually be contributing to your dry eyes.
Oh, yeah. Well, looking at this product, water, panthenol, glycerin, but they mentioned three ingredients. Radish root fermentate, which is peptide-packed, I guess. Hyaluronic acid, of course. And then there's this isopropylchloroprostenate.
Well, the radish root ferment filtrate is just a preservative. But the active that you just mentioned, the isopropyl... Isopropylchloroprostenate. Is actually a prostaglandin analog. And
back
in 2011, the FDA has put out big warnings and said that products that contain this material are in violation of the FD&C Act. The cosmetic products would be misbranded as drugs. Okay. And any product containing this ingredient should be used under supervision of a medical doctor because isopropyl coprostenate can lower intraocular pressure of the eye. It can irritate the eye. It can cause your iris color to change, cause macular edema, ocular inflammation, and can interfere with glaucoma therapy. Like, it's really a drug. And when a product contains this, they're not honoring what the FDA is saying. And in fact, Grande Cosmetics actually just settled a lawsuit back in February of 2024. How did we miss this for our lawsuit corner? It was a class action lawsuit for $6.25 million regarding the formulation of its brow and lash products. And so if you're asking if it's safe to use, although the brand says it's ophthalmologist tested, clinically tested, safe for contact lens wearers, the FDA says you should not be creating or selling products that contain this ingredient because they actually are drug products. And if you're a consumer using it, you really put yourself at risk if you're not under the care of a medical doctor, in my opinion.
I would avoid it. And it's interesting, it's at Sephora. So maybe they're just running through inventory or something. But with a lawsuit and what the FDA says...
And they're not the only brand. Rodan and Fields also got into a lot of big trouble for using this ingredient in one of their products a long time ago. In fact, they discontinued it. And so I would completely steer clear of this product, Jane. And at a very minimum, I actually would stop using it for a bit and see if it's improving your eye dryness. And if the answer is yes, you definitely have your answer.
Yeah.
And also let your eye doctor know that you're using a prostaglandin analog in a cosmetic product.
You know, just one other weird thing. Why would they say radish root ferment is a peptide pack for conditioning properties when that's their preservative?
Well, all ferments provide hydration and conditioning properties to skin.
Of course.
That's a property of all fermented products. But of course, you know, it's marketing looking for something.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I look at this ingredient, it was list, and it's interesting that we started out the show talking about how it's good to be a minimalist. They've got everything but the kitchen sink in this thing.
And it's being put on your peepers.
Right. Proline, farfar leaf extract, grapeseed extract.
We've tons of amino acids. I can tell extract. What amino acid blend they're using. Yep.
Wow. But they want to call out their preservative as their ingredient.
Oh, gosh.
Speaking of calling out, is that the music I hear?
Thanks for listening. If you get a chance, head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave us a review. That's going to help other people find the show and ensure we have a full docket of beauty questions to answer. Someone did show me the reviews lately, and I peeked at a couple, and it wasn't too scary, but I didn't go too much further.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate the reviews. Always makes us smile when they're good. And if you have a question, just go and record it on your smartphone and email it to thebeautybrains@gmail.com. We always like to have other voices on the show. The Beauty Brains are also on Patreon. If you like what we do and the fact that we don't have advertisement and you want to get your questions higher priority and a transcript of each show, go to thepatreon.com/thebeautybrains and subscribe at any level.
You know, next episode is our 200th episode together, Perry, and it would really make me happy if we had a couple audio questions on the show. I would love that.
They could be AI generated.
Well, I wouldn't love that, so please don't do that to me. Don't forget to follow us on our various social media accounts. On Instagram, we're at TheBeautyBrains2018. On X, we're at TheBeautyBrains. We have a Facebook page and a TikTok. Well, it's legal in the United States.
Yeah, as long as it's legal.
Well, thanks again for listening, everyone. And remember, be brainy about your beauty.
Thanks, everyone. Kittens.